Welcome to the Golden Age of Cardboard podcast, where we remember a time when stacks of cards were held together with rubber bands and Mickey Mantles were put in bike spokes. We hope you will enjoy and reminisce as you come along with us as we tell stories about the baseball cards from the Golden Age of Baseball. We will examine the state of the vintage baseball card market and talk to some of the greatest collectors in the hobby. You won't be hearing us talk about any chrome or shiny cards here. Now, to take you on this retrospective journey, here's your host, direct from the shallow end of the gene pool, my son, Mike Moynihan.
Yo, and hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Golden Age of Cardboard podcast. I'm your host, Mike, and we are, we're almost done with 2023. It has felt like it's just absolutely flown by, and we got a lot to look forward, I think, to in 2024 in the hobby. There's a lot going on. I think there's a lot to be optimistic about, and I wanted to kind of go through that and talk about that. And who better to do that with than my good friend, y'all's favorite hobby dealer, Craig Halbig. Craig, how you doing, man?
Hey, Mike. Doing great. How are you? How's the shower under the gene pool doing?
I don't get to make a lot of strokes. Let's just put it that way. Too shallow. How are things been going for you? Welcome to the show again for the millionth time, it feels like. But
life's good.
Love having you on and talking to you, because you and I we both feel the same way about cards. And this is for you guys out there to know why Craig and I click, is we feel the same way about cards. We both have a little bit different angles. Craig's a collector too. It has an amazing collection, but he's also a dealer. And so to get his perspective, he goes to a lot of shows. I like hearing what he thinks. I like hearing what he sees out there in the wild. So I love your perspective, Craig, and what you bring to the table. And I know the people listening and watching do too. So thanks. Yeah. So 2023 is almost over. Did you have a good year?
Yeah, we had a great year. As far as sports cards and the shows, I mean, every show that we did was great all the way up and through late fall. I mean, my last big show was there in Nashville towards the end of October. So I haven't really done much the last couple months because I've been busy. Been enjoying the bow hunting and the farms and taking a little break. You know, you got to take a break from sports cards sometimes if you're a collector and doing some shows to not get the burnout. So I take a little break so I can just enjoy things. And then I'll fire back up here in January when we head to Dallas for the Dallas show.
Yeah, my audience, by and large, were, hey, have a great break. Cause I took a break obviously from the podcast for a little while, and it ended up not being as long as I had anticipated, but I was ready to come. I was already ready to come back, and I've got some great guests line up for all the way through January. I'm so excited about, and that's, I just needed a little, at least from the Golden Age of Cardboard, right? Just like, okay, take a few weeks off, you know. We always need that. I think people don't do that in the hobby. You're either 90 to nothing, right? And it just, if you do that too long, it's just either you can't, at least for me as a collector, right? I have a hard time finding stuff. I'm just kind of not feeling it. I'm, you know, maybe it's I got some big expenses coming up and I really don't want to spend a lot of money on cards right now, but I feel like I've got to go, go, go. And people need to know it's okay to take a break, just like you do, right? You would agree with that?
I do agree with that. I've had a lot of people that, you know, guys that do shows or that collect, especially different people that kind of started doing shows and they start out at gangbusters and they're hitting all these shows. And then I'm like, you know, don't hit it too hard, because if you do, you're going to get burnt out and you're not going to, you know, you're going to want to take a break. So I think there's a fine balance there to be able to still enjoy the hobby. And, you know, if you're a collector, you know, sometimes you can really get caught up and start spending a lot of money and it can get a little bit overwhelming. Or if you're doing shows, you do shows, you know, every other week or two or three a month, which I do not do, but You can get burnout pretty quick, just like anything else. A break is good, but it doesn't take long to get back in the swing and be ready to get fired up. But obviously you can tell. So
I am totally there. I get that. You know, I had a lot of people this year that saw you at different shows that you were at. Hey, I saw your buddy, you know, send me a DM. Is your buddy Craig here, you know, or whatever. And it's great that people have made that connection out there. Oh, yeah. I think people really enjoy your stuff. What is your plan for 2024 show wise? Are you going to kind of normal year for you? You expect?
Yeah, I think so. You know, my daughter's going to be getting married in September. So that might put a little kink in a little bit, some of the shows later on, but you know, we'll be in Dallas here. Get to see you and everybody down that way. I've been trying to contact people down in that area, 'cause I haven't been down there for, gosh, I don't know, it's probably been a year. But getting the big cargo van and bringing a load. So we're looking forward to that show. Yeah. And then Strongsville, Ohio, we'll probably do that show again. We did it last year. And then we do, you know, the Nashville show. We'll have that one in the spring. We'll have the Midwest Monster in Annapolis. And then that'll go right into the National, which I know today I got a phone call and with the dealers, are getting everything kind of prepared and finalized for hotels and everything. So we're already getting things kicked off for 2024, and it's exciting. I think it's going to be a good year.
Yeah, it's crazy. It almost feels like the National prep just kind of keeps getting earlier and earlier almost every year. Maybe not by a lot, but a few weeks. Oh, it's that time again already to start thinking about late July.
Yeah.
It's just, and it'll be here before we know it, you know.
It will.
I'm excited you're coming in January. I've got to figure out a way to get you over here. You got so much going on, but I got to figure out a way. I got to bribe you somehow to get you over here. Julie's cooking. Maybe I could come over for Julie's cooking, but that'll be fun. I'm planning on doing Strongsville this year for the first time. I've never done it. Any advice for me on the Strongsville show? Bring a lot of money.
Yeah, definitely bring a lot of money. I mean, you know, it's a really small, it's just a regular sized hotel. You know, you go to a conference room in a hotel. It's a small room, really. But I mean, it's just jam packed with vintage. I mean, then you've got, you know, you got some of the biggest dealers in the world on vintage sports cards. I think, you know, SGC is usually there. I think Heritage is there, and some of the other auction houses will be there. So, I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's chaos. It was chaos. The first couple of days, the final day on Sunday was not as busy, but, it's just jam packed with people. So, I mean, if you get a chance to go, they're just about anything you can think of, for vintage sports cards. You're more than likely going to see it there in that room. So it's a lot of fun.
Am I going to be able to find a 33 DeLong Garrig? That's my question.
Yeah. That one, I don't know. I mean, fingers crossed maybe, but that's a toughie.
So I did, for those that you don't know, I almost bought one from Craig last year at the National, or I guess technically this year. It's not 2024 yet. And then I was like, oh, okay, I'll wait. You know, you ended up selling it, which was great. And then
probably an hour after you left,
right?
Somebody came up and boom, they bought it.
God's smarter than both of us. He knew somebody else needed that card, I guess. And then you and I were talking a lot at the last REA auction, right? And we were back and forth and you were providing wise counsel to me, and I ended up not buying it. I held off. I got to where I wanted to be price wise, and it was over that, and it wasn't that much over it, but I need to have discipline and not just, because I really don't know how much I would have had to pay to win it, right? And so that was good, but I'm still on the hunt for that card, and hopefully get one of those. And then so I get card advice from you, you get wedding advice from me, because my daughter's getting married in just a few weeks, and so we have that in common. That's been fun. You know, I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about that as yours gets closer. And
yeah,
it's a cool time. Got all this stuff going. Like every time I turn around, there's something else to do. You know, it's like too much going on. But so Strongsville for me, Obviously, I'll probably do, I don't need to do every Dallas show. You know, for me, it's doesn't change that much. So I go I go two or three times a year instead of, you know, there's six Dallas shows. I probably go two or three times. And especially if I know there's going to be people there that I want to see, it's more about the people than the cards, although I'll end up usually picking up some cards. And then I think 2024 for me, is that'll kind of be it. I don't think I'm going to California or Chantilly or any of that stuff again. Once I go to the National, that'll probably be it for 2024. I want to do the Nashville show though. I really would like to do that.
That's a lot of fun. Nashville's just fun.
My twin brother lives there. So that makes it kind of a 2-for-1 kind of deal. But my brother's coming to the National this year.
I remember you saying something about that. Yeah.
Yeah. He's never been. And he's like, dude, his comment to me, should I go to the National? I'm like, well, you don't really, you have a few cards, but you're not a collector, right? Why would you want to go? He goes, I want to see what your world is like. He's like, he watches videos and he sees all the friends and the camaraderie and the everybody hanging out. Heck, you came to the get together last year.
That was a blast.
And so he just wants to experience that. And I'm like, come on then. And so he booked his hotel and everything. He's ready to
go. Has he been to many shows? Does he go to many card shows?
We did as kids. He kind of tapered off way. I mean, I never stopped obviously, but he kind of tapered off in his, you know, enthusiasm for it. And right. So yeah, we went to a few probably together, but I don't have any like vivid memories of that, but I'm 100% sure we did. It's just,
He's going to have a wow factor for the National. If he's not been to show in a while, he's going to be really trying to soak all that in. I had a guy that helped me last year, helped Holly and I and Ryan, Evan. He helped us. It was his first card show ever he'd ever been to. And his first card show was the National. He helped us every day at the National at our booth. And he collects cards. He was just completely overwhelmed by just the whole thing. I mean, it's just the experience.
Yeah, I think Matt's going to be just eyes wide open.
Yeah.
Glazed over. But even for a seasoned card guys like us, especially at a National, by the third or fourth day, I've seen enough cards. You know, I almost get, it's so much fire hose, right, of cards that you kind of get, okay, you know, I get a little dizzy almost from it, thinking about it. But I'm looking forward to that. I think, well, let me ask you, I guess, and then I'll give my two cents. To me, the card shows seem to be waning a little bit, and maybe I'm misinterpreting what I'm observing, but I'd love to hear your opinion about the card show market and the state of it. And do you think it can continue at the kind of pace that it's been going?
Sure. You know, the last show I did was in Nashville, Tennessee, in the end of October, and it was better than the October show last year. So the one I did this October. Now, you know, here in the Midwest, I haven't really been to any big shows since then, but I go to a show in Terre Haute, Indiana, and a few other shows, and talking to a lot of these guys in these smaller towns that are setting up these shows. I know the one in Terre Haute, they said it was the best show that they've ever had, and that was just a week or two ago. So, you know, I think the card show market, I think it's still going strong, and I think it's going to continue to go strong next year, because I think people just enjoy going to shows and having those cards in their hands and getting to look at them versus buying online and buying on eBay and getting to meet people and just walk around and see stuff. I mean, go through boxes or go through, you know, whatever. Everybody's got their own thing and what they like to do to look at cards. So I don't see anything slowing down for shows. I mean, from the people that I've talked to and what I've seen, you know, not to say that it couldn't slow down, but I really don't see anything happening as far, you know, again, I deal with a lot of it's all vintage for me. So, you know, the set builders and the, you know, people that are building sets and, it's again, I really haven't seen the slowdown, you know, and every year we kind of talk about it, your articles, well, it's going to slow down or it's going to do this, it's going to do that. You know, it feels like to me that vintage lane is still strong, and I don't see any reason why it shouldn't continue to be that way. I mean, I don't know if you feel the same or.
That's a great perspective. I've thought there were so many shows, you know, kind of popping up everywhere that there would become card show fatigue. But I think that you're hitting on a point that's hard to quantify, but the card show experience and how unique it is and how special it is and how fun it is.
Yeah.
It's hard to beat. I mean, you can buy any card you want on eBay any time of the day, right? And that's all well and good, but there's something unique, something very special about going to a show and making it an event in your hobby life, making it an experience. It's pretty valuable. And I think people just, like, if we could all go to Disneyland every week, you know, we'd want to go to Disneyland, you know, as often as we could. And that's kind of the card show experience. And if you have them around you and you can do that.
Right.
Again, I do think you can get bored with card shows too, just like anything else. But I think if you, like for me, the way I'm invigorating that experience is going to Strongsville and trying to do different things.
Mm-hmm.
I am kind of tired of the Dallas show on it. Like it's like I go and I see the same guys, same cards. And
yeah. That's a good point because, you know, like we're getting ready to go to Dallas. So when I do, and I don't do a whole lot of shows, but I want to take as much stuff and as many unique things, because for probably you and me and a lot of the people listening, it's about the hunt. So if I go to the show, you know, what might I find? You know, maybe right. I'll find this, maybe I'll find that, maybe I'll find something that I didn't think I'd find, but guess what? I found it. And it's just the excitement of what's out there. It's the treasure hunt. You know, I think that's what draws a lot. I know that's what I still go to shows to buy. You know, I may not spend much of anything, but if I find some cards that are neat or something for my collection, it's just that hunt. It's the excitement of being able to go out and, you know, buy some cards and find something cool. So when I do these shows, I try to take unique stuff and different things like, wow, you know, I haven't seen that, or that's really cool. Or because that's what draws people to your tables. That's what draws people to shows, is you can go to a show and everybody's got the same stuff, or you can go to, you know, some of these shows and it's like, you know, wow, there's a lot of neat stuff here and it's unique. So it's the hunt. I think that you don't have, I mean, you can hunt online, you can hunt on eBay, but you know, walking around in a show to me is just, that's one of the better parts of the hobby in my opinion. So
I agree. And I know from personal experience, some of the best feelings I get when I go to a show is buying something I wasn't even thinking about. If you'd have told me 3 hours earlier that I would have bought this card, I would have thought you were crazy. And I find one and it just looks awesome. And I have plenty of regrets of cards I didn't buy that I wish I would have, that I now, should have bought that Stan Musial Red Man.
You're never going to forget that card, are you?
That's the funny thing. I never forget the cards I passed on. If that, those stick way more than the great deals that I got on a card I ended up buying. You know, why is that? I don't know. It's just, those stick, you know, and get lodged in the brain.
Yeah.
You mentioned, Craig, the vintage lane is strong, right, in the hobby. And I would tend to agree with you. I think there's parts of it that have, certainly prices have come down relatively universally in the vintage world. But I think rare and good cards are still expensive. And right. I think, you know, more common stuff is maybe coming back down to earth a little bit, which is good for me as a collector, right? I'm thrilled to be able to buy stuff cheaper. When you say it's strong, do you mean the demand is strong, that the interest is strong, the prices are strong, like, or all of it? Like, kind of unpack that a little bit.
I would say, you know, the demand I think is still strong. I think people still enjoy going to shows. They still enjoy building their sets. They still enjoy buying cards. Now, yeah, I would agree that there's a lot, there's graded cards out there that have came down in price, you know, and I take graded cards with me and I've got a bunch of them and I'm going to have them down in Dallas. A lot of stuff that I haven't even priced that I've sent off and got graded. And, you know, when you review those prices and you look, you know, sometimes there's cards that have went down and sometimes there's cards that are still the same price that they were you know, in the fall. So, but I think the demand, in my opinion, and, you know, raw cards, you know, like I have the all the books and boxes full of to help people build their sets. I mean, if you've got really nice grade, high grade stuff, I mean, that stuff, I mean, it just goes, it goes quick. So a lot of people like to build their higher grade sets too. So, you know, I don't deal in a lot of the big high, I mean, you know, obviously the Gehrig DeLong, and I've got some of that stuff that, that I sell, but a lot of stuff that I sell is raw. And then I have some of the graded stuff that's fairly high priced, but nothing in that, you know, $10, $15, $20,000 range that I take to the shows. And I know some of that's maybe come down a little bit, but with what I do and what we do with the set builders and with the raw collectors and with that, we just keep plugging away. I mean, I feel like every show that I do, and it'll be that way in Dallas, I've rented a bigger cargo van because I can't bring enough stuff. So, I mean, that's the attitude, but I want to bring as much as I can because every collector is looking for maybe something different. So the more I can bring and the more unique stuff I can bring, the more excitement maybe I can bring to somebody that shows up at our booth or our tables to take a look at something. So
I would also think from your perspective, being that kind of a dealer, that when you're prepping for the next show, whatever it might be, Dallas or wherever, the commons and stuff, they don't, their prices don't change a lot. They're kind of pretty still. You probably don't reprice, you know, this is my box of $3 commons from this year or whatever it is.
Right.
You know, that stuff probably doesn't change a lot, which makes it way easier and less stressful than having to look up hundreds and hundreds of slabs that you might bring and have to reprice them and think about it.
The raw is all the same. I mean, I really don't. And I mean, you know, you can get the Beckett, vintage Beckett and all that, look at the prices and a lot of those go up and stuff. But, you know, I really don't like all the books and the boxes and the commons and everything. Still, I don't really change anything. I mean, a lot of it's still the same. And we, you know,
the books, that makes sense. That makes sense that it doesn't change a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I could go in and try to raise prices and do that, but I just pretty much keep it the same and try to be as fair as I can on prices. And we, you know, we move a lot of cards. So
I think it's going to be pretty status quo in 2024. Honestly, I don't see a lot of, like you said it earlier, why would it, you know, fall more? I mean, there's still high demand. I do agree with that. I still think people, and I think even more, not necessarily an avalanche of people that are coming into the vintage world, but I think more and more people as they grow and mature in the hobby start gravitating towards vintage or at least adding vintage to their collection. And so they're always looking for key cards, or I bet you can't keep enough key cards. And I don't mean mantles. Everybody has mantle. You can find, people think mantles are, and they're great. I love them, but they're not rare. They're everywhere. You'll always see mantles. You'll always see Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, you know, the big guys. But I would think you also probably have a high demand for kind of those second tier Hall of Famers and stars, that it's hard to keep inventory of those guys. Is that true? Or am I?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, you know, there's always people that, there's a lot of collectors that just collect, I want Ernie Banks, or I want Roberto Clemente, or, you know, whoever the player is. And you can't have enough of those. So, yeah, I mean, I'm always trying to have multiples of different ones, you know, high numbers too, you know, people building their sets and, you know, hopefully, you know, 66, 67 high numbers, 61 highs, you know, all that stuff. If you've got those that are nice, I mean, those always, I mean, if you've got 66 and 67 high numbers at a show like Strongsville or Dallas, I mean, you're more than likely probably going to sell all of them. I mean, they're That's all awesome. Going to do because they're tough to find. And if they're in nice shape, people are going to gobble them up, you know. It's just people building those sets and they're not easy to find. And I think a lot of people like to have those in their hand and be able to look at them and really get an idea of the condition of the card. So it makes a difference, I think, when you can look at them.
Yeah. And I think set builders really care about that. That is a huge deal for a lot of those guys. And I understand why.
I do too. Yep.
You mentioned thinking about, you're buying certain things. As soon as you can find it, you can get rid of it. Have you found, always had this theory, like at some point we're going to find all the collections that are out there. Somebody's going to find them all. At some point we're going to run out. And it just doesn't feel like we're running out. In fact, it's almost like the boom in the hobby created a significantly higher awareness in the general public about sports cards. And we're finding more and more of these. I know for Chasing Cardboard anyway, we have lists and lists of people that have emailed us. Hey, we want to sell you our cards. We want to sell you our cards, whatever. Will you come look at our collections? And it's, we can't even get to all of them and plan for it. There's so many. I need to start calling you and saying, here, here's somebody up in your neck of the woods that wants to sell their collection. But you're not finding, you're finding plenty of stuff to buy. You're able to replenish your inventory pretty easily. Is that true?
I'm still finding some collections. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's kind of, it comes in waves. You know, when you do a few shows, you make some contacts. But you know, I'd say in the last couple months, I did buy one original collection from somebody who collected as a kid. You know, and they have sets from 64 all the way up, and they even had all their cards in shoe boxes, basketball, football, and baseball, you know, and there was, sets, I mean, several sets in the early 70s. I'm going to bring some of those sets down to Dallas. And, you know, sometimes in this particular gentleman, you know, he's still attached to his collection. That's what you find a lot of times is, you know, when you collect as a kid and you have the cards as a kid and you maybe started collecting and building sets, a lot of people are still attached to their collections. And sometimes people will sell, maybe want to decide, well, I think I'm going to sell these for right now, or I'm going to sell this for right now. And they slowly sell because they're still attached to the collection. And you run into that sometimes. You know, I had another collection in Strongsville that I've been talking with a gentleman, you know, his collection, he opened them in packs in the 50s. Wow. 55, 56. His initials were DG. I looked at the, I remember it was busy at Strongsville, and it was just Holly and I at the booth. And this older gentleman came and he wanted me to go out to his vehicle to look at these cards. And I was a little reluctant because we were so covered up, but I went out and he had all the cards in books. And the only problem was about half of them had his initials on the back, DG, when he was a kid. But the cards were gorgeous. Now, not all of them, but he had all the Mantles. Now, he also luckily collected in the 80s and was and bought a lot of tobacco and gold borders. And he had Gaudis and he had all kinds of stuff. So, you know, he's kind of one of the – there's several guys that are kind of, you know, still attached, but, you know, thinking about maybe selling their collection. So, you know, you just be a resource to try to tell them, go through the collection and talk to him about it. And that's what I did. And, you know, maybe you'll get a call about the collection and maybe you won't, you know, but always, I think just being mindful that people are attached to their collections as you buy them and just being there, be a resource. And maybe you'll get a phone call and get an opportunity, but there's still some collections out there. It's just a matter of, I mean, you can't sit at home and if you're looking for collections and not, you know, do a little advertising and let people know, because people aren't going to come knocking at your door. So you got to be, you know, you got to be hunting for them.
Yeah. We've found that from maybe initial contact on Chasing Cardboard, it might be 6 months till we actually kind of get everything, all our ducks in a row to be able to go look at it, potentially purchase it. And even then, with 6 months to think about it, you get there and they're like, I don't know that I want to sell all these, you know, same. Yep. Same kind of thing. It's like, well, we came all this way, not to, you know, not for nothing. We're here to buy cards, and you know, it's okay. We get it, and we're sensitive to that for sure. And you got it. The point is, you got to play a long game sometimes, and just be, like you said, a resource, be helpful, and sometimes that works out great, and sometimes you've just helped somebody, and that's okay too, right? Mm-hmm. Help somebody understand and feel better, or maybe understand that the value of what they have. When you have a set, like you just mentioned, like say you have a 73 set and you bring in it, you're like, I'm bringing all these sets to the Dallas show. Is that to break them up or will you sell it as a set? I've always been curious what goes into determining how you do that?
So yeah, like the 70s sets, let's say a lot of the 70 sets I have, you know, some of the years I have 6, 7, 8 sets of each. So, you know, if I get so many, like the 71 and 72, I've got several of, so I'll probably bring a couple complete sets and maybe sell some complete sets. I haven't really decided yet, but I may, because I also have, you know, thousands and thousands of each year. I've got them in books and in boxes, and then I've got my backup inventory all those years. 72 is a very popular year. 71's tough with the black border. There's a lot of people like 72s. It's got the high numbers, which are kind of tough, but just the colors of 72s are pretty neat. And the inactions can kind of be tough, but people like to chase that set. So I always try to make sure I've got plenty of 72s and 72 high numbers. And once in a while, I'll bring complete sets. Not that often, but sometimes I'll bring a few.
The first card I ever bought from you was a 71. It was a 71 Roberto Clemente, PSA 6.5.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I still remember.
That card's went up.
That card has gone up a lot, yes.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's the breakup. I guess it's kind of this, you're torn as a dealer, right? Because complete set, you can sell all the cards in one shot. The breakup value is probably more, but it takes a lot longer. So it's kind of this, aren't you kind of weighing time value of money there? Like,
yeah. How many 72s do I have? Do I really want to break another set and have, that's the whole thing. I mean,
right.
It depends on your inventory and what you can do and how well it sells and what the breakup is on it. But
do you have people asking for complete sets?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. People like to buy complete sets, and I like the 50s and 60s stuff. I don't normally sell complete sets there. I'll break those up and get them graded. My problem is when I get stuff graded, then, and I have this stuff, then a lot of it I'll keep, I'll put it in my collection, but the 50s and 60s are still, I know there's a lot of that, but people still enjoy collecting that stuff. I've noticed that the mid to late 60s have gotten a little more popular. The 70s, and we talked about that, I think maybe the spring or summer, about, the shows have been really busy with people buying cards in the 70s.
It's their prime time, right? If you're hitting 60, you're the 70s where your golden years, right?
Right.
Cards. I don't know if I've told you the story, but I bought my 65 set. It was a complete set, and it was at a shop, actually, but it was MM7 up in Oklahoma City that I've gone to a bunch and know the owner really well and done plenty of deals. And he had a one price for the whole set, right? And I'm like, hey, look, I have all the Hall of Famers, you can literally pull all those. I don't need them again. What is that? How does that change the price? And it was significant, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
You take out the Mantle and the Mays and all the big cards, the set gets a lot cheaper very quickly. And that made it palatable to me to be able to just to buy it all at once. And it was already in a binder, already numbered. It was like, this is great. I have a whole 65 set now. And to me, I enjoy both ways building a set. I enjoy buying it all at once.
Right.
And I enjoy buying it piecemeal. A little bit. By the way, before we get off later tonight, I got a couple of cards I need to see if you have for a set. I'm literally just a couple of cards away, so don't let me forget later. But
okay, you guys need to know. Hopefully I can help you. But yeah, I mean, I remember down in Dallas one show, I had a 50 Bowman set, very nice, and I broke it up, and it was the first day of the show, and I had my commons in the showcase, and I had some of the nicer stars there. And long story short, this guy, I've been wanting to start a 50 Bowman set, and I ended up putting it all back together, and he bought the whole set there at Dallas because he had the opportunity to get the whole thing in one shebang. So I mean, I've sold a few complete sets, I guess, but everybody's different. Some people want to chase it and they want to buy them one-on-one. I've had people that'll start a set fresh and they'll buy literally hundreds and hundreds of cards for that year. And usually they can get into them, pretty good prices. And that way they start a set, or they'll buy the whole book. I've had people do that before.
I think I do this a lot also, in that I will, kind of a hybrid of that. I'll buy a big lot of cards from that set, right? And there might be some dupes in there. And I just basically go in and, okay, I hold two cards up. I've got two of the same card. Which one's better? That'll go in the binder, right? The other one I can resell later or whatever. And then I start picking off the stars. And I think that's probably a very common way that people build sets as well.
Yeah.
Because you can buy lots relatively cheap on a per card basis. And then that gets you kind of a big head start, a jump start into that set. So you're not just feeling so overwhelmed with having to build a set from card number one.
Yep.
And I guess we're just kind of throwing out ideas to people to think about is that if you want to start building sets, it's good that you're finding collections because if I'm a dealer, I'm always like, if you do well in Dallas, you've got another show. And I know you have a tremendous inventory overall, but you still even got to be worried about dwindling inventory over time. If you just keep selling cards and don't get any new ones, eventually you run out of cards, right?
Yes. I mean, it's always in the back, you know, every time this year, for example, you know, it's like we did the Strongsville show and then we did Nashville and it's like, you know, you just get hammered at these shows. It's like, I've got to get some more cards or I need to buy some more cards. And, you know, I've got stuff here at home, but you know, like we talked about earlier about the stars and having enough stars and certain years, you know, we kind of try to, and sometimes when it's chaotic, it's hard to do it, but you try to kind of keep notes of what's selling. So then I know when I get home, maybe kind of what I want to focus on. But I mean, it's always in the back of your mind because every time I do a show, I want to make sure that everything looks good, that I've got a good inventory. And, you know, when everybody comes and they ask for certain cards, hopefully that I have them, you know, that's the goal anyway. So, it's the only stressor really of doing those shows and those big shows is just making sure that your inventory is still good, show after show, you know.
Do you know, like, I'm curious if you, do you sell thousands of cards at each show? Do you sell hundreds? Like if you were to get, I know you guys system is like you're sitting there counting every card, but
it's thousands
every show.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I take so many, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that will just, they'll buy stacks of cards. They'll buy, I mean, there's just so much that they, when they're building their sets. I mean, if it's a 3-day show for sure. I mean, it's a significant amount of cards. So, you know, I had my two nieces and I've got a buddy of mine's daughter. She was over here today helping me, you know, putting 55 Bowman's, putting stickers on cards and putting cards in sleeves and sleeving stuff up. And then I'm pricing it and just to make sure that you've got enough cards. And now I started buying, all the card savers. And she'll put stickers on the empty card savers. So that way, whenever I have the cards, I can put them in there and price them. It's just a little bit to save time and to, because I want to bring as many cards as I can to the shows. You know, that's my goal is to have just a lot. So hopefully I can find, sometimes finding it, knowing I've got it, but finding it at the show is sometimes, but I try to be as organized as I can and make it as simple as I can for the collector.
I guess one of my dreams is to be sitting at a table and somebody walks up and says, I've got all these cards and I don't know what to do with them. And like the guy that you walked out to his trunk of his car or whatever, you know, that's just like, it just feels like it would be so awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I've been fortunate to see some of those collections and it's just, it's exciting. I mean, you know, just, you're always hoping for that collection to come across, and we could do a whole podcast of collections that I can talk about. I mean, I've been so fortunate, but it's the excitement that everybody has to find that collection that's just out of this world, you know?
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, maybe from a vintage perspective, I know you've gravitated a lot towards SGC in terms of what the cards you're sending in that are great, that you feel like, okay, I want to grade this. This needs to be graded. It'll be more valuable. Whatever. What does go into your reasoning for deciding whether to sell the card raw or to go ahead and submit it?
Usually the eye appeal of the card. I mean, if it's got nice centering and it's just, you know, a good looking card, you know, and it's, you know, a pretty good star card, I'll send it and get it graded. Hall of Fame rookie card, sometimes I'll get those graded. But I don't want to get a whole lot graded because I've got people that don't want graded. They like to have raw. So, you know, trying to balance how people are, you know, what people are looking for and trying to have a little bit of both, I guess. But I like SGC. I like working with them. They've been great. Everybody there is, on top of it, I feel like, you know, so I've had a lot of success with them, and I'll continue to, and you know, people, everybody likes PSA, or, you know, some people like SGC, but I sell a lot of SGC cards. I mean, if the card has a good eye appeal and it's a good looking card, you know, my experience this past year at the shows, SGC or PSA, if it's a beautiful card, it's probably going to sell. So,
yeah, I do feel like there's a lot more acceptance of SGC into the vintage world. You know, yes. They were known so long as a pre-war grading, you know, just that was their niche, right? And I think there's a lot more acceptance of people wanting, I don't care, SGC or PSA, if it's a nice looking card, great, I'll buy it. And I actually think that's good for the hobby. I think that's, you want competition, right? For sure. Because that drives down pricing for get cards graded. And then I also think that it's good just to have choices, you know? And the more choices we have, different people, I'm a PSA guy, right? And it's more, I told Nat Turner last week, like, I'm a PSA homer. You got me, man. I'm stuck with you. We're going down together. This was after Nat and I talked last week for an hour on the show, we talked another hour and a half off the show.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of cool insights. I felt like I was able to share with him my personal feelings about some things that they do that wouldn't have been appropriate on air or as we were recording. And I think he understood where we come from as he's a collector too. Right. But still, you know, sometimes I was just kind of real with him.
Yeah.
And didn't mean to be rude, but customer service obviously is something they could. And he was, by the way, incredibly receptive, incredibly cool about it. Like, hey, ask me anything you want. Like, he couldn't have been better in terms of having a conversation with him, but they still got me, even no matter how bad it gets. Yeah. So I'm always looking for PSA, but I've found myself buying SGC slabs more and being more willing to look outside of my tunnel vision, you know, my PSA tunnel vision. And that's been good for my collection, honestly.
You add more cards, I think, if you, like you said, if you've got more choices. And I've got a lot of my stuff is on the PSA registry. But, you know, now I find that there's cards that I want. If it's in an SGC holder, or I have it raw and I get it graded, then that's just going to fill that spot for me in my collection, because I know the card is nice. And I'm not putting it in the inventory and PSA's inventory, but I'm not really worried about that. I mean, I know some people like that competition, and that's fine. But for me, it's just about the eye appeal, the card. And I like getting the cards graded within a couple of weeks. I don't like having my cards gone for months and months, especially if it's something I want for a show. I mean, like, you know, right now, if I've got stuff I want to send at PSA for the national, let's say, I need to be getting it there, you know, because it's going to take months and months to get it back, you know, especially commons, you know. But
it's a great point. I think grading's always going to have a place. You know, I think it's only going to grow in 20. If we're thinking about 2024, and that's the point of this show, is to outlook over the next year. Grading's not going anywhere. It's only going to get more and more popular with people, especially for key cards, right? I think not everybody wants to collect commons graded, but rookie cards, like you said, Hall of Fame rookies, key cards, stuff like that. There's always going to be a demand for grading those, period. But there'll always be a demand for ungraded versions too.
Choices. I mean, if you know, people want to have, when you do those big shows, there's people looking for something different, SGC, PSA, whatever. But if you got pretty good eye appeal, what I found, those bigger shows, that stuff's going to sell. But I mean, I think 2024 is going to be, I think we're going to be just fine.
Yeah. Hobby's not dying, is it?
No.
Remember when you and I were talking about that? I think that was maybe a topic like 2 years ago or whatever.
Yeah. And we've talked about it on podcasts before, you know, and there's always that thought is,
hi, what's Holly. Going to happen.
Hey. Say hi, Remy. Come here.
There's Craig's partner in crime at card shows.
There's Mary the card collector, Remy.
That's awesome. Yeah. Holly, are you looking forward to 2024?
Am I looking forward to
the national 2024? Yeah.
And you got a daughter getting married. Congrats.
Yeah, that's been crazy the last couple weeks.
I got some tips for you later. I'll
take them all. When's your big wedding?
2 weeks.
Ooh, cool.
Two weeks from when this show will air, I guess that should be more accurate. Okay. When everybody's listening to this out there, it's 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be good. I'm excited. She's done amazing, but getting ready and being on budget, which is the biggest thing.
Yeah, that's good.
We'll talk.
Yep.
Good to see you. All right. So that's the real brains of Craig's operation.
The real brains of the operation, I guess. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
She's been a lot of help. Not a lot of guys can say that they have their wife at shows. I couldn't do it without her. And I've got,
I was about to say, you could say easily you wouldn't be able to do it without her. Like,
no way. Yeah, couldn't do it. Yeah.
Because I see how busy you are at shows. And it's like, you got 10 guys wanting to talk to you. And it's like, I'm only one person, man. I can only do so much. And she's a great asset.
Yeah.
Obviously to your life, because you love her, you're married to her, but
See, that's a whole nother podcast. You know, all of us collectors out there that spend our money and have baseball cards scattered all over the house. I mean, you know, I'm fortunate. My wife, you know, there's cards all over here in the dining room. There's some in there on the kitchen table that I was working on today. I've got in the basement, and I got the office with cards. And hey, it's part of our life, but it's what we enjoy. And if we're married, hey, our spouse should know that we love it and be right there along our side. So I'm fortunate to be able to say that I have that. So, and I know you do too.
Maybe I could convince, I know I could convince Julie. We got to convince Holly, like, to do a live stream where they can answer questions from people about how they interact with their spouses about their cards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, if you guys are watching and you would like to see that, Holly and Julie and maybe some other ladies that we could get of friends of mine to come on and talk about their experiences with us crazy card collectors.
How do they keep their cool with the sports card collector? Right. Cards everywhere. How do they do it? I mean,
and do it as a live stream where they can take questions and people can ask them stuff. I think that'd be super fun. You can host that. I'll let you host that.
Yeah.
You'd be a good moderator.
Sure. Yeah. We might have to have some beer or maybe have a little make a party out of that one. That might be interesting. So.
Hey, you've just convinced me. You sold me. You had me at that party. So,
yeah.
Well, man, I'm excited about 2024 for the hobby. I think it's going to be just fine. And yep, if nothing, I think the hobby will grow. I think the vintage world is very healthy and prices are going to change, right? But that doesn't mean it's unhealthy. That's just kind of part of the cycle. You and I have been through many cycles in this hobby over the decades, and it's not any different this time. It's been fun, and glad you're looking forward to 2024 as well. Any final thoughts before we go?
Not really. Just, enjoy collecting. You know, if you get burnt out or you get a little bit tired of it, take a break. But, it's supposed to be enjoyable. So make sure you don't make it a stressor. Try to enjoy it because it is a hobby. That's why it's so much fun. That's why we love it.
Absolutely. Well, everybody, thanks so much, Craig. Thanks for being here again. Yeah. And we'll catch you guys next week for another episode. It'll be 2024 then. Keep collecting. We'll see you.